two.
The line is busy.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Hello? Hello, Sam? Who am I glad I got you?
Operator.
Because your favorite stars are just one phone call away, it's time to dial an icon on the Frank DeCaro Show on Sirius OutQ 149.
Yes, it's Frank DeCaro live in Los Angeles here with Miss Doria Biddle, Lal Dangling Dan, and Jessica Rabbit Woman Thing, Hold Down the Fort in New York City. We're gleefully bi-coastal, and we're excited because I don't know if we've ever had an in-studio dial an icon. Dial an icon is where someone we've always wanted to meet. We usually just call them up, and well, they know we're going to call. We don't prank them or anything. I mean, we actually, they know we're going to be there.
Uh-huh.
But we're just so pleased to have you here, and you're gorgeous as ever. As long as your husband doesn't get mad at me. Yes, Miss Susan Blakely is here. Ms. Susan Blakely.
Thank you.
So
thank you. So sweet. Oh, I love being the first.
Yeah, that we're thrilled.
Breaking your cherry.
I know. Thank. She knows it's satellite radio. See, listen to her. She's talking dirty already on my show. Now, you're in the new film, Hate Crime, which is going to be shown here at Outfest in Los Angeles. Tell us, and the film deals with a gay couple and a religious family moves in next door, if I've got it right, yes? And the son is not exactly the most homo-friendly person ever. One night, the one of the gay lovers doesn't come back from walking his dog, and the dog comes back. Mm-hmm. And we tried to watch the movie last night, and the DVD didn't work in our computer,
oh,
and I feel bad.
I'm so sorry. It's such a good film. It is a story about two men that are very much in love and about to get married and want to have a kid, and you really get to know them, and then you see this. It's actually not the whole family. The family lives in town, but the son, who's my son, Chad
right.
DiNello, the actor playing him, moves in next door, and then the actor who plays the lead in this movie, Seth Peterson, is the one that survives. I mean, he's not attacked. His partner's attacked and killed. At first, he's not dead.
Yeah.
You know, he's in the hospital suffering, and Cindy Pickett is wonderful, plays his mother. And Bruce Davidson plays the preacher, my husband. I loved my part. Because
yeah, Martha Boyd is her name, right?
Yeah, I really, you know, I've known people like this, and it's just like you just want to say, underneath, she's probably a good person, but she just doesn't have a clue. So she's a bigot, you know, and she just doesn't even know because... It's everything. She's just been brainwashed this way to believe anything that she thinks that the Bible, you know, I always wonder about that too, how much, who wrote what and what. We don't follow everything in the Bible to begin with. So, but she just believes that and she's so overly sincere, you know. You know what I mean? So I love playing her. It was really fun.
What appealed to you about this subject matter in this film? How did you get involved with it?
Well, I actually personally just love my part. I love the part. I love the whole script. The whole script was well written, but it was a chance for me to play something I've never played, and that's always fun. But I really think that the more movies that are out there about gay people that you really get to know people as real people, is going to help everybody. You know, it's just going to help people because I think we do relate to people through film and movies, and
I think so,
you know,
too.
And so I think that this is one of those films that. It's just very moving and very real.
Yeah, it's a tremendous way to humanize people that have been demonized by some people and we want to say, oh well, you know, movies are movies, but they don't. They shape our notions of what's romantic, what's normal, what's you know, acceptable, any of that stuff. And television certainly as well and doing it. And now, is this film going to be do you know if it's going to be distributive? Hate Crime is going to be?
I don't actually know. My husband's over saying, give me a thumbs up, I guess. So I don't really know. I know it's been to a few festivals, and so they have distribution now. Is it going to be coming out? Do you know? Steve?
Yes. Okay,
that's
okay.
My husband, Steve.
Your husband of 29 years,
yes.
Is what he said. That's fantastic.
Yes.
That's hard to do in Hollywood, isn't it? I mean,
well, you know,
or anywhere, actually.
I just knew that I couldn't handle prison, so through the bad years, I knew I couldn't kill him, and now it's all great, you know.
We're talking, of course, to Susan Blakely, and she is in a new film called Hate Crime. And we were going through your credits, and there's so many things we want to ask you about from that. But I didn't realize you were born in Germany, right?
Mm-hmm.
And moved around a lot. If the internet reports are true, Hawaii,
Korea. Oh my God!
Texas.
Right?
Were you a military child?
Absolutely. That's it. Yeah.
Your dad was an army colonel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what was moving around so much like for you?
Well, it's all I knew, but I still, it was always hard. It was very hard. I was a very shy kid. I always say I'm really a shy extrovert because I had to be extroverted. I had to get out. Otherwise, you know, you'd come to new schools, and it was difficult for me because I hadn't gone to kindergarten or nursery school, and I went into first grade, and I cried all day the first day. And then about 3 weeks later, we moved to Germany, and then I cried all day there, probably about 2 days.
You just remember oh, my God, we're in Germany.
Oh, I was... actually, I was excited about going back to Germany. I thought I was very confused when I was little. I thought the army hospital was Germany because I knew I was born in a hospital. I was born in Germany. See, I should have gone to kindergarten. I would have learned something.
When did the desire to act begin? Because I know you were a model and quite successful at that, and it's obviously why sitting here. Did you want to act from the beginning, or was the modeling the first thing you wanted to do?
No. God, I fell into modeling. I actually was one of these girls who had never bought the magazines. My girlfriends had some, and I didn't really know that I looked like a model, but I had... The acting bug I got, believe it or not, from reading, because I didn't see a lot of movies, we didn't have TV, and I just would connect to characters that I, you know, the people that I read about so deeply that I felt like, you know, like anyone does who reads, you become that person in your mind. So I identified in that way, and somewhere along the line, I managed to see, and I don't know how I got into this, but I managed to see The Three Faces of Eve. With Joanne Woodward.
And
I kind of got, she's an actress then because she's playing all these three different parts, and what a brilliant thing. And then I also saw at my grandparents, I saw I Love Lucy and then Carol Burnett. So both of those shows were, I mean, I basically didn't know, but I just wanted to be like, you know, like a lot of kids. I wanted to be a comedian, and really comedy is what I love the best still. So, it was a lot of that. And then I did some modeling in Texas to pay, you know, for some bills in school, and I ended up going to a contest in New York, and Eileen Ford wasn't really part of it, but somebody I went to see there said, you should go over and see Eileen Ford, you're her type, and they signed me that day and set me up on a commercial, which I got, and it was like that.
That's fantastic. Now, I don't know if it makes it harder for if someone's an army colonel, your dad, to, what did he think of your fashion and your theater career, you know, your acting career?
I think he was mostly worried about me being on my own that young. You know, I was just turning 18. I was 17 when I went, and that was hard for him. I think he felt scared, nervous that I would be, you know, in New York by myself. I kind of left home without telling anyone. My mom says, and my mom lives with us now, and she says, yeah, I didn't know you were leaving till we got to the airport, because I just said I was going to New York for a week. She didn't notice I had a few extra bags, but...
Maybe that's better that way. I don't know. You just kind of, when it's almost too late, you're just like, I'll call you. I'll be back sooner or later.
Yeah.
So, but it's great. So many people who are successful as models first don't make we won't mention any names, but don't make the leap and are not terrific actresses. And why do you think you were able to do that? I mean, because you're a wonderful, wonderful actress.
Thank you. Well, I did work. I think I'm one of these actresses who had to work at it. I studied with Strasberg and Meisner and a wonderful teacher named Warren Robertson. I really studied a lot, and my goal was to be an actress when I went. So that helped. I mean, I just got every single commercial because I could actually talk and, you know, and walk at the same time. So I did hundreds and hundreds of commercials, and that was all experience, which was great. But in my first movies, I feel like I'm terrible. I did my very first movie was an Ismail Merchant James Ivory film.
You know, Savages.
Ismail,
right? Savages.
Yes, Savages.
Savages
with Sam Waterston and Kathleen Widows and Asha Pootley. That was really a terrific movie. But I was terrible in it because I was so self-conscious. And then even also when I did Lords of Flatbush.
You did The Way We Were, a little part in there, too.
I had a little part in The Way We Were,
right?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. All of that early stuff I can barely look at. I don't think I got good until after Lords of Flatbush, I did a film called Report to the Commissioner, which was a movie, a book, and then a movie with Michael Moriarty, and, in fact, Richard Gere was in it. And that was that part I loved. I had a really great part playing an undercover cop.
Yeah, and we have to ask about The Towering Inferno.
Yeah.
What was doing that movie like?
Well,
you got a big role in that, as I recall,
yeah,
right? Yeah, wasn't so small.
That's,
role,
that's
yeah.
My husband I met, actually. He was handling Richard Chamberlain, came to the set. It was
and
fascinating.
You didn't date Richard Chamberlain, or
he was my husband.
No, I know.
Yeah, no. But it was interesting because having not grown up with TV, I knew who Fred Astaire was, for instance, and Bill Holden, but I'd never seen any of their work. So I was really fine around them. But as nervous as I get, I was a wreck around Paul Newman because I had such a crush on him. I could barely talk when I was in the same room with him. But Fred Astaire, I was totally cool with until, and we used to hang out, and Bill Holden used to take me to lunch at the Apple Pan, which is still there. And
we know it all, too. See this roll here? That's Apple Pan roll.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So good. We had great lunches there. But then one day there was a retrospective of Fred Astaire's work, and I watched it all afternoon, all weekend. I can't remember. And I came back, and I couldn't talk around him anymore. I was like, oh my God, you're brilliant.
You know? That was in the middle of his dashing con man period, because he was playing the dashing con man.
Yes, he was. He was wonderful in it. And, you know, he was so darling. He was always asking everyone, including me, who had done nothing, you know, how was he in that scene? And, you know, he was just so open, and it almost was like insecurity, but it wasn't. It kind of reminds me that Barbara Streisand does that. She asks everybody around her all the time. Evidently, my husband worked with her for a period. She's always asking him, how did you like that take? How was this? And that's how he was. It's just the perfectionism, I guess.
Yeah. We're talking, of course, to Susan Blakely, wonderful actress. Her latest film, Hate Crime, is here as part of Outfest. And then she's done so many other things, of course, that we're asking her about. She's our latest Dial and Icon, but our first in-studio Dial and Icon. And so we're delighted to have you here. OJ was in The Towering Inferno, too.
That's
which
right,
I think it's
yes.
just, you watch stuff, and it's just, it's, you look at that now, and you're like, oh my God, you know.
I know.
You fear for the cat. I mean, I know it's already in the can and stuff, but you just, look out. You know?
Oh, he was still America's sweetheart then, though. I mean, he had such a wholesome all-American image.
Yeah.
Now, before we get on to absolutely wonderful, wonderful things that you've done, I have to ask you about two things. You did Airport 79, the Concorde. Do you have a Charo story for us?
Oh, my God. That's right. Charo. I forgot. There were a lot. What was it? Mercedes Rule? Was it? No.
Mercedes McCambridge.
McCambridge was in that movie. And Cicely Tyson. There was a beating heart or something. I'll tell you a funny thing about that story. This is about that movie. It's a true story. I went to a dinner one night in the middle of shooting it. And we were going to, I think it was Norton Simon, Jennifer Simon's husband, you know, the wealthy art guy and everything. We were at this big mansion in Malibu, and Jennings Lang was there, who was the producer, and the head of Universal, Lou Wasserman, was there. And I literally, I mean, talk about youth and not knowing. I went to the two of them and said, you know what, you guys? You should release this as a spoof. I said, this movie, you don't have to change a thing you've shot so far. I said, it's absolutely hysterical, because it wasn't a very good movie, I have to say. The earlier Airport movies were much better. Ours was the worst.
It's in the Airport Terminal pack that I have home.
Is it?
I'm very excited.
Good.
All four movies, yes. I'm very excited.
Oh, God. I mean, I play this sort of Barbara Walters character who doesn't have a clue. She never gets that the plane, I think, is shot down or attempted, almost shot down like three times. My boyfriend, Robert Wagner, I have all these papers with me that will incriminate him. And yet I never get that it's him, you know, trying to shoot us down. I don't know. And by the way, though, about a year later or 2 years later, they came out with Airplane, which was the spoof of...
Right.
So, but the look on their faces, I will never forget Lou Wasserman looking at me and his wife. Oh, my God, the whole thing was... I should have gone home right then.
Now, we also want to ask one more thing before we get to the questions we're dying to ask. We're friends with Marcia Wallace, and she was in a film that you were the star of. And tell us about My Mom's a Werewolf.
First of all, I love working with Marcia. She was so much fun. It was a real, real hot summer. I remember we were in horrible locations in the valley where it was too hot and by the freeways. And she was darling and fun to work with. But I remember the thing about that movie I remember is the script was really cute. And we went to do it. There was no budget, really. So there are all the special effects, like when I see the hair growing out of my legs. That wasn't going to happen. I mean, all that happened was I'm looking down, and then you see we glued on big tufts of hair all over my leg. And so you don't see it happening or anything. But it was a cute movie, and it was a fun role.
Well, we have to talk about something. I don't think we would call this a cute movie, but was certainly a seminal TV movie. Rich Man, Poor Man was so amazing. I mean, that's just one of those TV events that we never, if you were alive then, you never forget watching it. And what did that do for your career?
Well, I did a lot. I wish I'd taken advantage of it.
Well, you got the Golden Globe, I remember,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I got a Golden Globe, and I think I got nominated for, well, two other Golden Globes, but one for that and one for Frances Farmer.
Right, right.
But,
Right, an Emmy for that. You were nominated
for an Emmy,
too.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, so it did a lot in those ways. It opened all the doors, but I just wasn't interested. When I was young, I was, I don't want to say stupid, but I just didn't care about success or money. But it certainly opened every door. And that was, I have such warm feelings about that show, because when I think, especially the first 4 hours, the youth, the part of us in that small town upstate New York, I feel like I was there. It's because we were in the back lot, and somehow in the period and in the wardrobe that we wore and where we were, I still feel in my mind. It's like a book that you read, like I say. In fact, the best parts of that were from the book. My character was actually four different women in the book that they made into one. And, you know, it was Nick Nolte's big success and Peter Strauss's. And it was just, to me, it was such an interesting family saga, and I wish they did more things like that. That's why people loved it, because it was like reading a book.
I wish it were out on DVD. Are they working on that, or what?
I have no idea. I know it's been out on tape, but I don't like to watch things on tape anymore.
I know, and I looked it up on the Internet last night, and if you want to buy it on tape, because I don't think it's in print, it'll cost you $100.50
now. I know.
It's collectible.
Yeah. It's ridiculous, because it was probably one of the biggest television events of that decade, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It was something we were talking about.
It was the first, yes, it was the first big miniseries, and literally one of the best.
Yeah.
Still. After all this time, still one of the
best. You know who got me that job?
Who?
Carol Burnett.
Isn't that funny?
After, I don't know if she even knows how important she was in me wanting to become an actress, but the producer, Harve Bennett, right, sorry, oh, darling man, he lived in Malibu, and she lived in Malibu, and reports the commissioner was at the Malibu movie theater. And she had seen it and told him that she knew he was casting it. I guess they were friends. And I didn't know this, by the way, till much, much later, after I'd done the miniseries. And after I'd met her, she never said a thing. I found out later, maybe it was in the book of it, or somebody told us later, that she had recommended me to Harve Bennett to go see this report to the commissioner. And that's how I got it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, it's for people who didn't see Rich Man, Poor Man, it starred Nick Nolte, a very young Nick Nolte, very young Peter Strauss, and very young Susan Blakely. And it was on, and the country everybody watched it. We were obsessed with Rich Man, Poor Man. And did you guys know that it was that special when you were making it?
Well, you know, to be honest, as I told you, I didn't grow up with TV.
Yeah.
I actually didn't want to even do it. I mean, I had not wanted to do TV. But I read it, and I went, oh, my God, this is fabulous. I only read the first 4 hours, which, again, I think are the best. I think the parts they took from Irwin Shaw's book are by far the better parts of it. Sometimes it kind of flags and, you know, it's not as strong, especially in the middle parts, I think. But I didn't know. I just, you know, because I didn't have anything to really compare it to. I guess the networks knew, because there was a lot of buzz going on about it. But I didn't have a clue.
Yeah. No, because it still stands, and I'm sure they'll wise up and realize there's money to be made, and it'll be out on DVD in a beautiful, hopefully in a beautiful edition, and they'll
Made so many tapes they need to sell those first. Who knows?
Well, no, it's funny, because it used to be, you forget now with DVDs that taking up an inch of, you know, an entire season of Lucy taking up an inch of shelf space.
Yeah.
If you wanted Rich Man, Poor Man, it was like a foot of
shelf space.
Just sort of, you know, on your, there. Now, in 1983, Susan Blakely played Frances Farmer in a TV movie called Will There Really Be a Morning, and that was quite successful. What was it like playing such a troubled and
Well, interesting enough, that's
actress.
Another one. That was her autobiography, and I actually had passed on it about three times, because in reading her book, it was like, oh, my God, this woman's life, nothing good happens to her. There's like this one moment where she wins this contest and gets to go to Russia, but then her whole town denounces her as a communist. I mean, you know, she just couldn't get a break, and then her mother was so wacko and controlling, and then she ends up in the mental, you know, she didn't even really want to be an actress. She had very little desire. If she was going to act, she wanted to act in the city, New York City. She didn't want to be in movies. Her mother kind of forced her into that, and they had some sort of weird codependent toxic relation where she let that happen. She let her mother kind of push her around, and then of course she ended up in all these different mental homes. I mean, first of all, she attacked a hairdresser, and then she attacked a police officer. I think personally that she was on, from stuff that we had read, and she says in her book that she was on whatever kind of speed they gave in those days for losing weight. I forget what they're called, Benza something, or I don't remember. But she was on that, and I think that she had a chemical imbalance. And so the two, and probably an alcoholic. So those things mixed together made her seem insane. And today, that wouldn't be an issue. And she was
Unless you're Tom Cruise. It would be an issue, yeah. Other than that, it wouldn't be an issue. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because he couldn't take anything either. No. But I just felt that this woman, who was so gorgeous, beyond belief beautiful, and smart, and this incredible woman, she had one of the saddest lives I've ever seen anybody have. And that just, it really got to me. That was the only part I've ever done that got to me. There was one night after shooting all day doing these scenes where she had these ice baths, and she never had the lobotomies that were in the other movie. Not only was it not in her book, we talked to the nurses and the doctors from the hospital there. She never had that. That was something that they wrote in. There was a lot of fiction, actually, in the movie version. Her autobiography was the real stuff.
Yeah.
And we checked it all out. My husband does a lot of investigating for different things. So we did a lot of investigating. But the day that we did, she did have these, what did she have? Just shock treatment. She didn't have a lobotomy, but she had shock treatments. And she had hydrotherapy, these ice baths they put her in. And the day that I did that stuff, and I'm just faking it, you know, it was so hard to imagine that this woman was trapped in this sort of life, couldn't get out, and she'd been also to come down so far from what she had been. It just was beyond. And I just remember one day I couldn't even get home. I just couldn't stop sobbing because it's so different when you're playing somebody real. I think it's gone through. I mean, I'm somebody who has trouble watching movies. I'm always telling myself, okay, they just said action, they're saying cut, you know. I just can't handle it. I have to run out of theaters because I get so emotional.
But a couple of years before that, you'd played Eva Braun. What is it like? I'm Susan Blakely, and now I'm going to go to work and be Eva Braun. What the hell is it like to go play Eva Braun something?
Well, that's another one that I started.
The Bunker, it was called.
The Bunker, and Anthony Hopkins was Hitler. Well, I started to research it, and I found that I actually couldn't read about it. It was too much to read about the period. So what I chose was, I think Eva Braun was a very sweet woman, but not necessarily that bright. And a lot of the German people literally didn't want to know and did not know as much about what was going on. And I played her sort of like a groupie. She was so in love with Hitler that it was like I was going to get to marry Paul McCartney. All she wanted to do was marry Hitler, which they did in the bunker. So, by the way, we shot this in Paris, which was fabulous. We had the best time. I spent every piece of per diem that I had, every cent, on all the best restaurants. And I had a lot of time off. We were at a great hotel. It was just the best job ever. But all the other actors were very depressed. My character, I decided, was not depressed because she was just still so happy. She didn't care if she died. She was finally going to be legitimized, you know, and she was going to get to be with her man and die with her man. And the only thing that got to me was I remember thinking, I'm just going to think of it as getting to marry Anthony Hopkins and how darling he is and all of this stuff. But the day we checked into the hotel, Anthony Hopkins was across the lobby with his back turned. I didn't know it was him. And I looked over and I thought it was Hitler. I swear to God, he already had the body movements and everything. So that was sort of, it just gave me the chills.
It just must be so wild, I'm telling you. I just, it should be like, I'm going to go do Eva Braun now, and that's what I'll do. Now, it's terrible to follow up an Eva Braun question with this, but your jewelry is wonderful that you're wearing, the turquoise that you're wearing, and you have a jewelry line, don't you?
I do. Tell us about that. I don't have a website, though.
It's the Eva Braun collection, I believe. No, it's not. I'm kidding. What's the name of it?
Yeah, maybe I'm flashing back to Eva. Just something I love. I love stones. I just love stones. And it's a bit of an addiction that I plan to stop any day, but it's kind of taking over. It's got a life of its own. I started off doing it just for myself and my girlfriends, and then pretty soon, not only were people wanting to buy it, as soon as people started buying it, then I had an excuse to buy more stones because it's my business, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like kind of when you go into a store and you think you love everything, but you can't buy everything. Now I have to buy everything because it won't be there. When you see stones that you like, you got to get them then because you never can get them again.
Now, where can people buy your jewelry?
What do they do, honey? Do I have? I do have a website, but it's just not up. I guess it's under my name, Susie Blakely.
Susie Blakely.
We think it's SusieBlakelyDesigns.com. And I'll be doing some pictures in there. The reason I don't really do a website is I get copied a lot. And I am meeting with some people in New York about maybe being a designer for some other people, some big companies, which is the way I'd like to do it. But I want to keep my stuff very exclusive. I don't want to be walking down the street and seeing all the things that I love on everybody.
Right. You don't want it to go the QVC route, that kind of thing.
Well, if I did QVC, I would design for them with a different... with different pieces than I'm actually doing, or different stones.
Yeah,
they couldn't afford to do what I
do. Right, you're doing a couture kind of jewelry line, right? I mean,
yeah, I actually did. Speaking of that, Richard Tyler contacted me, and I did his fashion show.
How great! When was this?
This was the spring before this last spring.
That's
so great. It was in 2004.
Did you do a lot of runway originally, or
no? You know, when I was modeling, I never met a runway girl. It was two different groups,
yeah, print
two different
groups
camps.
And runway girls were totally different, yeah.
And if I went to, I used to go to Europe, I went to Italy and to France to do the collections for Vogue, for Paris Vogue and French Vogue, and did English Vogue. But I would work at night. The girls would do the show during the day, and then they would bring the clothes, and we would shoot them all night. And I literally never met, in that small city, one girl, and I would have loved, because I love to dance. The only thing is, I think to myself, because I was always sick about that I wasn't in that time, because I just love dancing. But I have a really weird foot, and it was bad enough in print ads. It's really, really narrow, and it just would shoot down to the front of the heel, just with about 2 inches in the back. I don't think they could have made shoes for me. So before I eat my heart out, I think, well, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's been a real delight. Thank you for coming by. Susan Blakely is in the film Hate Crime that is here at the Outfest Film Festival, the GLBT Film Festival here in Los Angeles. And look for it when it comes around.
I think it's going to be on, I think it's tomorrow night, Friday night at 8 o'clock at the Showcase Theater.
Showcase Theater, yes.
On La Brea.
On La Brea.
On La Brea, yep.
Here in Los Angeles. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
It's really a treat.
It's so nice to meet you.
Yes.
I love being the first.
You're listening to the Frank DiCaro Show on Sirius XM 149.